A single person, a stranger, happens upon a village. The stranger is hungry and thirsty, and the villagers are timid, afraid, and isolated in their impoverishment. There is a stultifying air to the community. Everyone is reserved, there is little vitality, and a pall is cast upon the village. When the stranger gently inquires if there is food that can be shared with her, she is met with blank stares, fear, embarrassment, and regret. Gently prodding, she is told of the pervasive scarcity in the village. The villagers simply have nothing to offer. Each has only enough and barely enough for his or her own family. But then the stranger changes everything. She announces that she has what the community needs, a special stone. The stone has the power to create a spectacular, succulent, nourishing soup. The villagers do not believe her, but she persists. So enthusiastically does she speak of the power of the special stone, so vividly does she describe the aroma and the taste of the soup, that soon some of the villagers have become curious. She entreats the villagers to experience the power of the special stone and to see for themselves. She asks, "Surely there is someone who has a large pot in this village, and surely someone in the village has enough water to nearly fill the pot." One villager, figuring there was nothing to lose by lending his pot, retreats to procure it for the soup, and another skeptically offers to fetch water. Now, with water and a pot, the stranger takes great care to drop the special stone into it. A fire is lit beneath the pot, and the stranger stirs the water and stone with great reverence. "Carrots and potatoes would go very well with this stone soup if anyone in the village happens to have any," she suggests. Carrots and potatoes are soon added, and as the soup is stirred and excitement grows, other villagers begin to volunteer ideas for additional ingredients. Beans and spices, herbs, tomatoes, and corn are gathered from villagers' homes and brought for the communal soup. Before too long, everyone is participating, volunteering to contribute something to add, and when the pot begins to overflow, villagers bring out other offerings. They set up tables and chairs and gather plates and silverware, napkins, glasses, flowers, bread, and even wine. Excitement grows all the while the stranger stirs the soup with the special stone and encourages and invites everyone to participate. And at last the soup is ready, the table is laid, and there is an abundant feast for all in the village. Now I ask you, what does the stone represent? What part does it play in this story? Today I would like to turn our attention to a theme present throughout our scriptures, that being the theme of abundance and scarcity. We often hear people talking about how there is not enough. If we turn on the television, if we sit down for conversation with strangers or friends, we will often hear the same theme. Many feel there's just not enough. There's not enough time. We don't get enough out of our jobs. Our partner doesn't do enough of the chores. We don't have enough resources. We don't have enough to retire. The overwhelming narrative is we do not have enough. And that narrative is so powerful, it can be difficult to see all that we do have. And it leads to a scarcity mindset. The opposite of a scarcity mindset, of course, is an abundance mindset, a sense that there actually is enough, and even more than that, there is more than is needed, more time, more resources, more money. This question of abundance or scarcity is one of the central questions that business management expert Stephen Covey posed in the 1980s in his best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. The book is a thoughtful analysis of how people become more effective managers and find deeper meaning in their lives. Readers have devoured it. Over 25 million copies have been sold. One of Covey's key observations is that we humans tend to have either a sense of abundance or a scarcity mentality. Those with a scarcity mentality think of the world as a limited size pie, and we all then compete for our slice. It's a zero-sum game. If your slice is bigger, then mine must be smaller. We compete for material goods, but also for intangibles like prestige or credit. At work, for example, those who tend to have a scarcity mentality assume that when someone else gets credit, then they lose. As a result, those with a scarcity mentality have a hard time genuinely rejoicing when others do well. In order to protect themselves, they secretly hope that others will fail. When put into these terms, it really does paint a stark and a sad worldview. The alternative, says Covey, is living from a sense of abundance. Managers with an abundance mentality believe the pie can grow. They see possibilities beyond what is. They encourage workers to fully use their talents to explore fresh options, and they rejoice when others succeed. Your success does not necessarily mean my demise. There is room for everyone with credit enough to share. We can reach for that win-win scenario. Managers who live with an abundance mentality, said Covey, are generous with praise, and their people have greater productivity. Covey considered the cultivation of an abundance mentality central to business success, as well as to fulfilling relationships among family and friends. When we live less from fear and more imbued with what is possible, we flourish. This message is nothing new, of course. Before Covey penned his bestseller, the French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, in his book, The Critique of Dialectical Reason, observed that scarcity is the overriding rule of life. Reflecting on the philosophy of Marx, Aristotle, Plato, and Kant, he concluded that the fundamental issue of human existence is scarcity when you examine it from a purely physical realm. Covey, of course, was writing from and to a business perspective, and Sartre was a philosopher, but their message is deeply theological, even if they did not intend as such. Over and over again in the scriptures, we encounter stories and messages holding scarcity and abundance in tension. And over again, the people of God are encouraged to the latter, to embrace a sense that we all have what we need and even more, and further, those provisions come from God. I believe this to be a timely reminder because I have sensed to a greater and greater degree that those with a scarcity mindset have been capturing more and more of our attention as of late. Or perhaps better stated, there are those who propagate the message of scarcity so as to increase and ensure their own abundance, as ironic as that may be. Of course, I also believe that as Christians, we are to be vehemently opposed to the message of scarcity. That sense that there is not enough, that life is a zero-sum game and that the pie is not big enough for all of us. For the God we worship and serve is clearly a God of abundance. One need only look around to see evidence thereof, or read the scriptures for examples. And God has provided all we could ever need. And in the case of most of us gathered in this space today, far more even still. Take, for example, the passage from Luke for today. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your span of life? And consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown in the oven, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying. For it is the nations of the world that strive after all these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Consider the ravens. Consider the lilies. Do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying, for your Father knows that you need them. Our God is a God who provides, and provides abundantly, such that we never need worry or fear, and to the point that we are encouraged to go so far as to sell our possessions and to give to those who are without. Parker Palmer, a wise Quaker writer, told some years ago a story that speaks to this matter as well. Palmer was a passenger on a plane that suffered the fate some of us have experienced. The plane pulled away from the gate, taxied to a far corner of the airport, and then stopped. He could hear the engines wind down, and his heart sank. The pilot came on the intercom and said, "I have some bad news and some really bad news. The bad news is there's a storm front in the west. Denver is socked in and shut down. We've looked at the alternatives, and there are none. So we'll be staying here for a few hours. That's the bad news. The really bad news is that we have no food and it's lunchtime." Everybody groaned. Well, this was back when they served meals on airplanes. Some passengers started to complain and some became angry. But then Palmer watched as one of the flight attendants did something remarkable. She stood up and took the intercom and said, "We're really sorry, folks. We didn't plan it this way, and we really can't do much about it. I know for some of you this is a big deal. You are really hungry, or you have a medical condition, and you need lunch. Some of you might not care one way or another, and some of you need to skip lunch. So I'm going to pass around a couple of bread baskets and ask everybody to put something in the basket. Some of you brought a snack, something to tide you over. Some of you have a few lifesavers or chewing gum or Rolaids. And if you don't have anything edible, you have a picture of your children or spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend or a bookmark or a business card. Everybody put something in, and then we'll reverse the process. We'll pass the baskets around again, and everyone can take out what he or she needs." What happened, Palmer said, was amazing. The griping stopped. People started to root around in pockets and handbags. Some got up and opened their suitcases stored in the overhead luggage racks and got out boxes of candy, a salami, a bottle of wine. People were laughing and talking. She had transformed a group of people who were focused on need and deprivation into a community of sharing. A world of scarcity had become a world of abundance. Sound familiar? One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they among so many people?" And Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to those who were seated, and so also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over so that nothing may be lost." And so they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. Each person on that plane and that little boy on the mountain in Galilee would have sworn that they didn't have enough, that the pie simply wasn't big enough. If someone else gets, then I don't. But that isn't the way our God works. Because our God is a God of abundance. And that brings us back to the village and the soup and the stone. Each person in that village was sure that they did not have enough. for themselves, much less for everyone else. But the stone changed everything. The stone, of course, could not be eaten. There was not actually anything special about it. But what it did was nothing short of miraculous. It opened minds and hearts to an abundance that no one could see prior. An abundance not in the individual items, but in the collective. Or even more accurately, in the faith and generosity of the villagers. Earlier I asked, what does the stone represent? And as with any good fable, there is no one right answer. Still, I would dare to posit that for us, gathered here today, this is what the stone represents. Or perhaps more accurately, the one witnessed to herein, the living word, the stone that the builders rejected. Jesus the Christ, who calls us from a mindset of scarcity to one of abundance. And in that abundance, to a generous sharing of what has been given to us, so that all may eat. And not just enough to get by, but an abundant feast. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.